morning, everybody. This is the Education Finance Committee. It is Wednesday, March 6th, and it is 8:34. A quorum is present, and we are now coming to order. Today, we'll be hearing a presentation from the Barr Center, a presentation on long-term facility maintenance, and Senator Bolden's Senate File 4035, and then the forecast bill, Senate File 4588. Before we begin, I would like to welcome the students from Minneapolis Citywide Student Leadership. We're happy to have you here, and please stand up. Everybody give them a little. You see our future standing there, and expect to see a few of you up here in just a few years, if that's going to work out all right. So thanks for being here, and welcome to the Capitol. I hope you enjoy your day. All right, we will begin this morning with the Barr Center presentation. I know we have a couple of testifiers. So Angela Jerebek, founder and executive director of Barr, thank you for stepping up to the microphone. Would you please introduce yourself for the record, and you may begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Angela Jerebek. I'm the executive director and the developer of Barr, which stands for Building Assets, Reducing Risks. So today is a thank you. So thank you for last year. You funded had funding for 18 schools to be able to start implementing Barr. We had over 50 schools apply late last fall for when the funding became available to start implementing Barr for yet this year. So as a quick reminder, Barr is a coaching and training model, has over 20 years of some of the most rigorous research that's ever been done to show impacts for both students as well as for teachers. The impacts for students include higher graduation rates, higher standardized test scores in both math and reading, closing the opportunity gap, as well as reducing chronic absenteeism, discipline incidents, as well as helping with suicide ideation, as well as suicide attempts. For the staff, we also have six measures that are approximate measures to teacher retention. Teachers are more effective, they're more satisfied, they work more collaboratively with their colleagues, as well as they see the student in a more strength-based way. So I think it's really important today for you to be able to hear directly from our schools that have been able to kind of see the impacts of the funding that you've provided. Very kind of briefly, Barr has always been school-based. I was a high school counselor, which I understand that you heard from the counselors yesterday, when I developed Barr. I had 5 years in a row that half the students failed a course when I was a ninth grade counselor. I knew it wasn't the students, and I knew it wasn't my colleagues, so I determined it had to be the system. And the issue is schools have inherited a factory model that was built for things, and we work with humans. And what Barr does is really recenter our schools on relationships, and those relationships are staff to student, and student to student, as well as data, quantitative and qualitative data. And that being said, we are able to really see the incredible talent of our staff shine when our students are continuing to succeed. So with that, I am going to have three districts present to you what their experience has been so far this year. And the first person I'm going to have come up is Principal Drew Mons from Apple Valley High School and two of their students.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that introduction and reminder of the good work that you've done and the kind of things that you've been able to bring to our school districts. Principal Mons, if you'd like to introduce yourself for the record, and you may begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Drew Mons, and I'm the proud principal of Apple Valley High School in District 196. It's one of four comprehensive high schools in the Rosemont, Apple Valley, Eagan School District. I always say that I have the best job around because I get to tell the incredible stories of the kids and the staff that we have at our school, so I appreciate the opportunity to join you this morning. With nearly 2,000 students, we serve a diverse population at our school. We have the highest percentage of students of color in the district. We also have the highest percentage of students that qualify for educational benefits, for special education services, as well as multilingual services. This year, we're implementing the Barr program. Excited to provide an update for you on our implementation process, specifically with our ninth graders. First, I do want to extend gratitude for the funding for Barr in the last legislative session. Out of numerous applicants, we were one of 18 schools to be selected. This wouldn't have been possible without the support of the grants for us at our school, as well as without the compensatory funding and the increase that we received this last year. This allowed me to be able to hire and retain 4 of our 6 bar teachers. We recently hosted our legislative representatives and discussed both the challenges and the successes stemming from last spring's historic legislation. One such success that is evident is our data. At the end of our first term this year, in implementing the bar program, we did see a school-wide passing percentage that increased to 94%. This was a really important goal for us, especially at the 9th grade level, because what that equates to for graduation rates. What was very exciting to see was an astounding 97% passing rate for our 9th grade students who were in the bar program. That increase was across the board, but we've never had as high of passing rates as we had in the 2 houses that we implemented here this year. BAR is inclusive. It focuses on all students. Our dedicated BAR teachers, they ensure that students understand the program's pattern. They foster data-driven relationships and conversations with both peers and adults. And this approach not only supports our most at-risk students, but also positively impacts the trajectory of all kids. For 5 years now, as Ms. Jerbeck mentioned, with the opportunities and thinking about those gaps that exist, we implemented 5 years ago a Missing Students Project. That has expanded possibilities for post-secondary success for our students. It does that by identifying and supporting students like Everett and Allie, who are joining me today. And through the guidance of the BAR teachers, both of these students have excelled. They will be enrolling in honors and college-level courses next year. In fact, Everett has already made a shift in that to not have to lose more time in his 9th grade year. Everett and Ellie are just 2 examples of students where our social studies teacher specifically made strong connections and encouraged them to take honors. Kelly Redmond, one of our BAR social studies teachers, recommended that Everett do honors. He's now enrolled in honors government citizenship, so it's not lost on us for him to be here with you today, as well as in a honors physical or science course. Ellie is a student leader in the classroom and in athletics. She comes to AVHS from a middle school where 50% of the students attend 1 of 2 schools. And she'll speak to that experience there, because that's not an easy thing for any 14-year-old to make a transition and to see that kids that you've gone to school for a number of years are going elsewhere. In conclusion, I want to extend our heartfelt thanks for the opportunity to share how BAR is positively impacting our school community. And it's now my pleasure to introduce you to Everett and Allie, 2 examples of Eagle excellence and BAR's success. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Principal. If students, if you would state your name first, and then you may begin.
My name is Everett Guzman-Reyes. Hello, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm a student from Apple Valley High School. BAR has helped me as a student for many good reasons. My first impression of this school and teachers were really good. I had made a community just by being at this school. The community and teachers were very friendly and open. This is what has helped me to communicate with them from a very early stage. In fact, my government teacher, who is one of the BAR teachers, Ms. Redmond, recommended me for honors, government, and citizenship. We are both very sad that I am not in class anymore. But, however, I am still in an English course with another teacher, Mr. Franis, and I gladly have Allie in that course too. I feel like I have always been supported to reach new goals, and I have been able to step out of my comfort zone to help others step out of theirs. I want to thank you guys for supporting us as students so that we can succeed and help others experience that success too. Thank you.
And you may begin.
Hello, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Allison Kaler, and I'm a 9th grade student at App Valley High School. I'm a student who came from a split school. Most of my good friends went to Eastview. The only people I really knew were my hockey teammates. Having no classes with my teammates was pretty scary. But through iTime activities, I was able to get to know new people and step out of my comfort zone. Not only did iTime activities create new bonds with classmates, but also my teachers. My teachers have gotten to know who I am outside of just being a student. And for that, that has created a safe and welcoming environment that motivates me to do the best that I can. Through iTime activities, my teachers have learned that I like to take charge and be a leader, which makes me feel recognized and like I belong. I want to thank you guys for letting me come and share my experience and for supporting my school. Thank you.
Thank you both for coming in and sharing your experience. And I'm really glad and happy that you were able to build those kind of relationships that really made a difference to all of you. Thank you for bringing them in this morning. Next, we have ISD 197, the Two Rivers High School. And I believe Principal Dr. Al Johnson is here. And then Assistant Principal and Bar Administrator Dr. Jessica Kabak, if you would like to join us. And when you're settled in, state your name and you may begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Dr. Albert Johnson. I am the proud principal of Two Rivers High School. You've learned a bit about BAR, and so I'm not going to rehash those pieces. However, I want to talk a little bit about the why for me and the importance it is for our children. I'm in my 17th year being in education. I started at Alice Smith Elementary as an equity integration specialist. Which is somewhat of a paratype position. And my goal was to find and see students that had historically been underserved and how I can support them. And I spent 5 years in that school district really working on doing that. I left there and went to St. Paul Humboldt. And I was at Humboldt for 2 years. And I had the same thing in mind. How can I support the students in this school? I then went and spent 7 years in St. Cloud at four of the years as a principal at McKinley Area Learning Center, Alternative High School, and then 2 years principal at Apollo High School, then a year as Director of Equity Services. I gotta be honest with you, I much more prefer being with students and adults. Please don't take that offense to that. What I've learned, though, is in all those districts, any child on any given day can walk into any building with a barrier to their learning. The greatest challenge of an educator is to determine what that thing is, what is that barrier, and how to help them overcome it. For me, we insert BAR. It gives me the ability to be proactive in supporting the social, emotional, and academic needs of my students. How often do we as educators wish, I wish I would have had that child years ago, or if I'd have known that. Right now, we're able to be really intentional in meeting and talking about the students. I cannot thank you enough for the funding you provided for us to be able to provide BAR. And you want to talk about an investment and a return on investment. This is your best bang for your buck, I will say. Okay? This investment into our students is an investment into our future. Now, I'm going to have Dr. Gokay back talk a little bit about some of the successes that we've seen. And I'm going to stay within inside of my 3 minutes.
Thank you so much. I really love your passion and the words that you spoke about finding those barriers and removing those barriers. I was a teacher for 25 years myself, and every child came in and you would look at them and you'd think, what do we need to do to make them most successful? And it sounds like you've been all over the place doing that, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, if you would begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Dr. Jessica Kabak. I'm an associate administrator at Two Rivers High School and the BAR administrator. Wanted to just express our thanks to you. This is our first year of implementation of BAR, and it is due to state funding. We appreciate you funding this important work so that our students are seen and supported. I am privileged to be part of weekly BAR team meetings where we are celebrating student successes, providing focus on and building off of student strengths, and collaborating to put intentional, data-driven supports in place for our students. Our teams are regularly partnering with families, understanding that our families are the expert on and champion for their students. Comparing our semester one failure rate from this year to last year, the percent of ninth grade students at Two Rivers failing one or more classes is down by 3%. We are excited to see our results for semester two, as we believe we understand our students better at this point in the year compared to last year. And we have stronger relationships with our students and families, so we are hopeful for even better results. Also, we believe our continued implementation of BAR will only help us get better as a system, so we can in turn improve our student outcomes over time. We appreciate your support in this endeavor. In addition to supporting student success, another outcome of our implementation has been the connectedness of our teacher teams. Many of my teachers have expressed their desire to continue to be on a BAR team next year, noting that being part of a collaborative team focused on discussing how we can best celebrate and support our ninth grade students while sharing strategies and interventions has made a huge difference in their experience working with ninth graders. After hearing about this excitement and energy, other teachers of mine have also requested to join bar teams. As someone who sees the impact of bar is having daily for my students, my teachers, and my families, I want to again say thank you for your support and funding.
Thank you also for your passion to this. And I think one of the things that stood out that you said was around teamwork and how important that is. It's sometimes you feel very lonely, solo in your classroom with your students, but when you have a team to really intentionally, as you say, address those needs of those students, it's so important. So thank you both for joining us here together today. Next, we will hear from the Red Wing Public Schools. Allegra Smisek is Director of Teaching and Learning and the Assistant Superintendent. And then we'll have Joshua Fuchs, the Principal of the Red Wing High School. Nicole Larson, their bar coordinator at the Red Wing High School. And when you are ready, please state your name for the record and you may begin.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Allegra Smisek and I'm the Director of Teaching and Learning and Assistant Superintendent for Red Wing Public Schools. We serve about 2,200 students in southeastern Minnesota, and we are in our first year of bar implementation for the 8th and 9th grade students at Red Wing High School. As my high school colleagues will be sharing, we've had amazing early success with the bar program. We hope to expand bar to our other schools as funding is made available. We've applied for funding through different MDE grants without success, but we knew that this could really benefit our district, so we ended up using a combination of our staff development funds and ESSER funding to get bar started at our high school. Red Wing invested a significant percentage of our own funds in this model because the bar program is really unique. It brings a combination of helping educators build intentional relationships with and among students and trains teachers in data literacy. Many programs are either or, but bar does both, and both are really key evidence-based elements for individual and systemic success. Now, I'd like my colleagues from the high school to share their perspectives of how bar is supporting our students and our educators to achieve better results.
Thanks so much. You may begin.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Nicole Larson. I am the bar coordinator at Red Wing High School. As my colleague shared, bar is helping our staff with data literacy, including myself. I am a natural relationship builder, and I love working with my students. Bar has helped me understand students' data better and in real time so that when I work with my colleagues, we develop effective interventions to support student learning and overall well-being. Data does not lie. The bar system of our meetings and our teachers' ability to collaborate has helped us achieve incredible results just after one semester. So after one semester, our failure rate has decreased by 8% in our ninth grade class. There has been a 25% reduction in major behavior referrals, and our staff are developing meaningful relationships with our students, which is key. BAR's training has allowed us to leverage data and relationships, and we have learned so much in this first year. We know we will only get better and see more positive results in the future. Thank you again for funding this important work so that all of our students are seen and supported.
Thanks so much. And our next testifier.
Good morning. My name is Joshua Fuchs. I'm the high school principal at Red Wing High School. Madam Chair, committee members, thanks for taking the time to hear us today. I want to tell you a little bit about the story around Red Wing. We are an 8 through 12 high school, and why does bar matter so much? I, like my colleagues who've testified before, am a student-centered leader, and I know that relationships matter deeply. We were only able to implement bar in our 8th and 9th grade level, which is key. One of the unique things about Red Wing is that our students have a fantastic opportunity through College Promise to get funding for college, and we get them into internships their senior year. This is only possible if they have their credits attained so far. Any students that are lacking credits as they go into their senior year, as you know, will have to be making up those credits and get caught up, which means they would not have the opportunity to do internships that at the end of the day help our students understand, is this a career profession that I want to go into, or am I in need of looking a different direction? Some of our students recently shared their stories around this aspect, and BAR's what's going to make that possible. We're able to intervene early with our 8th and 9th graders. We are staff poor. We don't have a lot of support staff due to the size of our high school, so our teachers actually supervise their hallways one period of the day as well. For our teachers that are in BAR, they've been able to get to know students that they don't actually have in their classroom, which means more positive relationships as they interact with students, as we're making sure that they are in their classrooms, attaining their credits, and engaging in the learning that we desire them to be a part of. So we desire deeply to expand BAR, and as my colleagues have shared, we have invested a lot of our own dollars into this, which means we've not been able to put those dollars in other places that we also need. And so our hope is to continue to grow this out in our district, because we are seeing the rewards from it already. And it means that our students will be college ready with as many doors to choose to walk through at the end of their high school experience by attaining credits from the get in their 9th grade experience. Thank you again for taking the time to hear us today. This does matter. Students matter for our state.
Thank you all so much for being here today, too. I know one question I have, and we'll have time. We have one more person to speak, but while I have you up here, I know that Red Wing is a really unique district in that they serve a large Native population, and that you have created a learning environment that has positive. You've got a lot of language, Native language, a lot of the culture in there. Can you talk a little bit, maybe, and I don't know how this is, but how BAR sort of interacts with these unique populations or our EL students?
Yeah, so we are a diverse population. We have a very positive relationship with Prairie Island that we're continuing to foster and grow daily. Things are not always perfect. But all students are, because it's data-driven, like, we're having students identify through the BAR process to work with them. In Red Wing, we also have cultural liaisons, so we have liaisons specifically related to our Prairie Island students and our Native American students, and so we involve them in that process. When we get into our big block meetings in particular, we bring them in, because it's important to sit in community and sit in circle when we're working with students, so that we understand also the cultural needs of our students, and that we're connecting them in the right way. As our first group testified, this is a system, right, that was designed. It's not always people-centered, and we have a rich culture in our schools in the state of Minnesota, and yet we're constantly still learning. To have students come up to me and use the Dakota language to greet me daily is always a pleasure and a joy, and enhances my own learning, and it also reminds me how much more work we still have to do. The BAR process with the big block meetings and the Community Connect meetings gives us space to learn as adults as well from our students and from our families. And so it's critically important that we continue to think about the cultural lens as we do this work. But the system of BAR provides that space for that to happen.
And Madam Chair, if I may add to that, I think the eye time lessons and the relationship building that's part of BAR really helps students in a safe and structured way connect across friend groups, across culture. There's really intentional lessons about family values, cultural values, where students get to share those with each other. So I think with students, that relationship is built with educators, but it also really brings our students together in a powerful way.
Well, Wopila Tanka to all of you. Thank you so much. Next, we will have Angela Jerebek, the founder and executive director of BAR, to close us out.
Madam Chair and committee members, once again, this is just a notable heartfelt thank you for your support last year. There's also in your packet letters from other schools that are just continuing to be able to show incredible impacts. What I really want to go back to is we have the staff in our schools that not only are wanting to do this work, they are talented, and we have incredibly talented students. So what BAR is really doing is disrupting this factory model, so we can really see that talent, identify those barriers, and equip those adults to be able to remove those barriers. So thank you again for your time today.
Thank you again for coming in and for doing the good work and the hard work of developing this program. I know we did put some dollars out there last session, and it's so rewarding to hear that those dollars are being used in such a good, positive way and reaching the students directly, which is really what we're looking for, is that direct service to our students. So thank you all very much for being here today and sharing your successes.
Thank you.
And thank you to the students for for sharing as well. All right, folks, we're going to move on now to a presentation on the long-term facilities maintenance revenue. It's a big subject, LTFM, as we all know it. And we've got a few folks to talk to us about that. In our packets, everybody, we should have a PowerPoint presentation and then a handout that shows a little bit about rural schools and the things that are struggling out there. So when you are ready, I think we have Kathy Erickson here. And are you ready to go? Okay, go ahead and go.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. My name is Kathy Erickson, and I'm the Director of School Finance for the Minnesota Department of Education. And I'm just going to be providing an introduction to the long-term facilities maintenance program. But before we get to that, I have a slide related to our Minnesota 10 commitments to equity. Knowing that facilities is such a key component for our education in our districts and other LEAs. So we will be starting with the funding side of long-term facilities maintenance. Before long-term facilities maintenance was enacted and started in fiscal year 2017, we had two basic formats of facilities funding, which was for our traditional districts that were not our largest districts in the state, who were a part of the deferred maintenance funding and the health and safety programming. So we had two basic for our traditional districts that were our smallest districts, and then we had what we called alternative facilities, and those were for districts who qualified with average pupil counts per grade level and square footage in their school building. So our largest districts in the state had a different but same type of structure and funding, but were able to utilize more funding than our smaller school districts. As we looked at deferred maintenance revenue and our health and safety revenue, those were equalized, meaning that there was some state aid and then some levy limitation or property tax levy on each of those. Our deferred maintenance had a higher equalization, meaning that districts could get a little more state aid, but our health and safety program was one of our smaller equalized portions. So health and safety projects that were approved were oftentimes on our levy limitations. For deferred maintenance in the last year of our conversion over, you can see on our slide how much we distributed in deferred maintenance aid, and then how much deferred maintenance was on our district's levy limitations and certifications. And then you could also see our health and safety aid and our health and safety levy, where the majority of our funding again was on our levy limitations versus our state aids. And then in the last deferred maintenance revenue process, it was $64 per adjusted pupil unit was the distribution of our deferred maintenance, but could be prorated if your average building age was less than 35 years. So you wouldn't get the full $64. If you had newer buildings, it would be prorated to a lesser amount. For districts in the alternative facilities program before LTFM, if they had those qualifying grade levels and had qualifying square footage, they could utilize a 10-year plan and have larger projects approved, not having to go to the voters. And you can see here on the last year of implementation before converting over to our long-term facilities maintenance program in fiscal year 2016, districts were receiving alternative facilities aid around $19 million. And the alternative facilities general levy, so for individual projects through the general fund, was over $81 million. And then for districts who were using the debt service model and using alternative facilities to do long-term debt, we also had over $80 million in debt for those programs and projects. And then finally, for those alternative facilities districts, they were levying approximately $48 million in health and safety. So in 2017, the legislature converted to what we call our Long-Term Facilities Maintenance Program, or LTFM. So with our LTFM program, We again recognize alternative facilities districts a little bit different than we do our traditional districts. I do also want to note that long-term facilities maintenance revenue does go to charter schools at a different amount per pupil, and they are not required to spend long-term facilities maintenance revenue the same as our regular school districts. So for our districts who have are not our alternative facilities districts, they are going to receive a approved amount per pupil, and then they may also utilize a hold harmless to our old laws related to health and safety. So if they have larger projects that need to be approved that goes over the cap, we can look at those health and safety projects to make sure that those go over. So again, they'll be receiving one pocket of funding for both health and safety and deferred maintenance under one program versus the two separate programs. And then our alternative facilities districts are grandfathered in to the old formula so that they are guaranteed some state aid, as well as having projects being approved over a capped amount. They do not have a capped amount, but they are not able to carry over funds in their fund balance. They must tie out each year. So you can see that our traditional districts had a phased approach to the amount per pupil funding starting in fiscal year 17 at $193 per pupil. In fiscal year 2018, it was $292 per pupil unit. And then in fiscal year 19 and beyond, we are at $380 a pupil, which has remained the same since 2019. Just to show some differences between our two programs, our per pupil districts who receive the $380, they must have a 10-year plan. That's both for alternative districts and traditional districts. That must be submitted to the Department of Education. We have a team lead in school finance who reviews every single 10-year plan to make sure it's in compliance. And you are not able to levy for the levy share of LTFM unless you have an approved 10-year plan submitted to MDE. That happens, date is July 31st, so we see a lot of districts coming in right at the end of July submitting those. Those 10-year plans must also be approved by their school board. So that process is important that those plans get approved by their school board before submission. Smaller districts with the $380 a pupil can also reserve any unused funds of that $380. Also want to note with the $380, we talk about it a lot, but that is also prorated. So if you do have newer school buildings and a lower average building age, you may not be receiving the full $380. It does get prorated by the average age of your school buildings in your district. Your district may go into temporary deficit if you have a project and you need to catch up with the revenue for the following year. So it doesn't stop you from doing projects that you need to get done, but you will always reconcile to the $380. And again, if you want to save money for a larger project, you can keep money in a reserve for those traditional districts. You can, in the traditional 380, potentially get additional revenue if you have health and safety projects over $100,000 that are approvable. Our three main areas are HVAC or indoor air quality, asbestos, and then issues related to fire marshal. So if those larger projects are approved by MDE and also approved by the school board, the district can levy on top of their traditional $380 or prorated $380. Our alternative facilities program, so our larger, what we often refer to as the Big 28, the largest 28 districts in the state, they also must have a 10-year plan. They also cannot carry over unused. They're reconciled to their projects because most likely they're at a greater pace than the $380. So our team each year looks at the approved projects. We then get their actual expenditures and tie back out and do adjustments each year on their actual costs, which the majority of that is through their levy limitation and certification program. And then also making sure that we're following through with those specific larger projects where they could potentially bond over time versus doing a what we call pay-as-you-go, where there's levy amounts put on each year. A larger project can be, bonds can be sold, and they would reconcile that over a number of years. And with that, I just have that brief overview, and if any members have any questions, happy to answer.
Members, do you have a burning question? Otherwise, do you want to wait until the end of all? Okay, go ahead. go ahead, Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the things you talked about, just a quick question, you said with the $380 cap, that it was on the average age of their building. So if you have a district that has a really old building and just recently built a new one, they can't necessarily get to the 380 to help with the old building, is that correct?
It is the average of all buildings in the district. Thank you.
Okay, maybe stick around in case there are more questions, but next we have Mr. Indahar, if you'd like to come up and introduce yourself and share what you've got to share.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for inviting me here today. My name is Bob Indahar. I serve as the Executive Director of the Minnesota Rural Education Association. I am speaking to you today about long-term facility maintenance revenue from the perspective of a former superintendent at Moose Lake, a 2014 co-chair of the School Facility Task Force, and of course, for MREA. I'm often asked, what's the big difference in funding for large schools versus smaller rural districts? My standard answer is twofold. The first is our reliance on the operating referendum to overcome shortfalls in district budgets. The second part is the way districts can generate revenue to maintain and build buildings. With the many topics you could be talking about today, I appreciate you paying attention to probably one of the biggest inequities in the state, how we fund our facilities. To be blunt, rural districts cannot understand why 28 of the biggest districts, the ALT facility districts in the state, are able to budget for facility maintenance and health and safety without major statutory limitations, where the smaller districts are forced to budget within a capped amount of levy revenue, which doesn't keep up with inflation. Instead, the smaller districts must campaign to raise revenue to address critical infrastructure. You know, buildings wear out the same and need to be maintained the same, no matter how big, no matter how small, and no matter where you are in Minnesota. When my members ask me, well, why do half the students in this state get this benefit? Well, the other half just have to make do with less. There's no clear rationale for why this occurs. This inequity has been going on since 1993, and as you'll see later, it is becoming more divergent in the coming years. First, I'm going to talk about being the co-chair of the Facilities Task Force in our key recommendations, because this is, I believe, where LTFM came out of. The Facility Task Force came up with several recommendations, but probably the most significant recommendation revolved around LTFM and better equalization for facility levies. For this meeting, I'll simplify what we recommended. There was 4 points. First, all districts should have access to long-term facility maintenance funding based on a 10-year facility plan. The second recommendation was state-imposed capped limits should be phased out after a 4-year period. The idea was that after 4 years, all districts would be on the same footing as the Big 28. Districts that are currently exempt from state-imposed funding limits should remain exempt. The rationale here is that the alternative facility funding works, but we should get all districts to that level, not just the 28. And the fourth piece was adequate equalization. It makes a big difference in rural Minnesota. So what did the legislature accomplish, or what did they do? In 2015, they created LTFM, allowing all districts to participate in long-term facility maintenance in the year 2017. It folded in the three revenue streams, ALT facilities, deferred maintenance, and health and safety. And it equalized this to the state tax base at a percentage. I'd like you to look at the graph now on the one handout that I sent you, and just let's look at what happened. It's It started in 2017, so if you look at the graph, we did a pretty good job. As a matter of fact, we got really close to having all districts being the same. We were within $148 per APU of having all districts being equal. But since then, LTFM has not increased for the non-ALT facility districts, and the effects of the pandemic era construction inflation has been crushing. The graph clearly shows that the big 28 districts have been able to meet increased needs for revenue to maintain their buildings. Inflation and materials are hurting all districts, but only the 28 districts can deal with their maintenance issues without going to their general fund dollars or to their voters, which should be going towards staff and students. So what do we want to see happen with LTFM? We need to see a path to remove the cap for all districts that are not ALT or that are non-ALT funding districts. We also feel that maintenance for additional critical infrastructure should be included in the LTFM program. Kathy talked about asbestos removal and indoor air quality as being part of a bigger projects over 100,000. We would like to see roofs, we would like to see sidewalks, we would like to see pavement as part of that as well, because that does not count towards the cap. And I would like to note that this was proposed by in the governor's budget plan last session, this particular one. And then the third thing is we want to see equalization as part of this. So in conclusion, LTF legislation was a good way to help all districts with their building needs. It combined and simplified funding streams going to a district towards building maintenance, and it allowed all districts money towards building maintenance, which was indexed to the state tax base per pupil. This is important so that equalization does not erode when property values increase. Where it fell short was it was supposed to increase to a point where all districts were on the same playing field as the Big 28, who have uncapped levy authority. The legislature did not follow through with the final recommendation piece of LTFM, which was to make sure that all districts had the same opportunity. As prices have been increasing steadily, the biggest school districts have the safety valve of a large tax base and levy authority to maintain their facilities. By contrast, rural schools often must draw from their general fund to fix buildings, taking money away from programming for students and funding to make staff contracts competitive in today's labor market. I trust you're starting to see and understand the frustrating limitations many schools face because of this funding inequity. While I usually talk about rural district because that's who I represent, there are also metro area schools that face these same inequalities. Thank you for your time today. And please work with us to close this funding inequity in our system. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Inhar. We have one more testifier, but does anybody have any question for Mr. Inhar? All right, we will move on then to Mr. Bourgeois from the Minnetonka Executive Director of Finance and Operations.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, senators of the committee. I'm here to talk on behalf of AMSD, or testify on behalf of AMSD, MASBO, and pretty much any other alphabet conglomeration of groups, because this is a topic that's really important to districts across the state, as you know. So I'm being a little bit of Captain Obvious there, but it is a big deal. If you think about our schools, they really are our massive public infrastructure assets, just like roads and bridges and water, waste treatments. They're the center of a lot of our communities, not only center of our communities in small districts, but centers of the communities in suburban districts. So they have a unique role, and as an asset, you want to try to maintain them and get the maximum out of them that you can have. We have our facilities have been given to us by prior generations, and they paid it forward to us. And those districts of us that are the ALT facility districts where we have the ability to put a $5 to $10 per square foot per year into the buildings, we're able to make sure that those buildings are able to be ready for the next 50 to 60 years. I work in a district where we have about 1.9 million square feet. We are one of the 28 alternative facility districts. The 28 all facility districts have about 38% of the students in them and about 43% of the square footage in the state based on the latest state data on the website. So we're able to basically keep things up, and we're working to maintain our buildings and actually then continue to pay that investment forward. As an example, in my district, we have one high school, two middle schools, we have six elementary schools and a community education building. The newest elementary school was originally built in 1967. We have over 1.1 million square feet that's actually eligible for Medicare. It's over 65 years old. They're over 65 years old. We have another 400,000 square feet over 25 years old from a bond that was built during a bond issue in the late 90s. The thing about it is we have the ability to keep our buildings in a state of good repair, and we're thankful for that. I've been able to work with all facilities since I was working in Rochester prior to this, and it has allowed us to have a much better environment for our students. You don't have to send the students to school with umbrellas in their book packs and their book bags because they got to worry if there's going to be a rainstorm today and the building's going to leak. So it's really important. The thing is for the 20 districts, it's broke or it's not broke. Don't fix it. I was one of the members of the School Facilities Financing Working Group in 2014, 10 years ago, and I got on that for the same purpose that I'm really testifying about now, is I wanted to make sure that we maintain the all facilities for the districts that had, but the whole idea was to try to bring every other district up and make sure that they could basically maximize their public's investment in their facilities. And as Mr. Indahar indicated, we got very close. However, there's a publication called the Engineering News and Record, which actually started in 1874, and since 1915, they've been keeping a building cost index on monthly inflationary increases. It's used by architects, engineers, project estimators to basically figure out how much things will cost if they're going to build something and have to bid it, or if they're going to actually be the bidder on it. Well, the building cost index, since we came up with this report, has increased in 55% in the Twin Cities and actually across the country, because it measures 20 of the largest metropolitan areas in the U.S. But the last 3 years have been crushing, 27% increase in the builder's cost index. So at $380 per student, there's a lot of our smaller districts with just a few thousand students, they don't even have enough money to put a roof on. They don't have enough money to make sure that, you know, if they got leaky windows that, you know, they're letting the air in, that they can't replace the windows. So it is pretty critical for them, and they're being, I don't like to use the term left behind, but I mean they're really struggling in terms of being able to keep their assets up for their communities. So it's not just there's districts like that in the metro area. There's districts like that all across the state. So it's a really urgent need. I urge you to be able to look at what Mr. Indahar suggested, trying to raise everybody up so that they can maintain that unique and that unique community asset that's in many places the center of their social structure, social network in the community. And the other thing about it is, there'll be some additional dollars being spent, but if you think about it, our 1.9 million square feet in Rochester, we insure that for a replacement cost of $900 million. That's what it'll cost to replace those buildings if we never needed to replace all of them. So putting $5 to $10 a year per square foot into our buildings is actually way more cost effective than letting them, if you look over the generations, because this is a long-term game, it's a multi-decade game, it's way more cost effective to just keep putting some steady dollars into them so they can serve for the long term, as opposed to wearing out and then you gotta abandon it and build a new one on the end of town. So with that, I'd also just say boards will also self-police their all facility budgets or their maintenance budgets, because they're going to be looking at how much the tax impact will be in their cities and in their school districts. So, got to give them a little trust, but we also have MDE looking over us, making sure that we're not getting out of whack. So I just would urge you to consider that, and thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for sharing that information with us. Members, any questions or comments for our speaker? Any questions or comments for any of our speakers? Great. I would just like to say that we will be hearing two LTMF, what is it, LTFM bills next week, and one is the one that's mentioned on the flyer here. I believe it's a Senator Kupik and Senator Rarick bill, so more to come next week. All right, thank you so much for coming in and sharing all that information with us. I hope you all understand it, because it's very complicated, and we're all trying to wrap our head around it. It was interesting this summer when we traveled around the state visiting all the different districts. This was one of the big topics and the big requests that we heard, and we've been trying to understand it and get a better feel for it, and so appreciate those voices coming forward. Next, we are going to hear Senator Bolden's bill, Senate File 4035. And welcome to the committee. We'll be laying over Senate File 4035 today, and I understand you have an A2 amendment. Would you like to speak to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excuse me,
before we do that, Senator Gustafson, would you please move Senator Bolden's A2 amendment?
So moved.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The A2 amendment just reflects some technical changes after speaking with the department.
Thank you. You may go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I am grateful to be before you with Senate File 4035. This is a bill around the PTEC program, part of Rochester Public Schools. It's an excellent program that allows for support for students specifically into careers that are needed in our community, nursing and IT. And it is targeted specifically to support students from underrepresented communities. It's an excellent program that has been in our community for some time. It started as a program that was fully funded by the state. This bill reflects conversations and a sort of a tiered approach to move away from having it be fully funded by the state and sort of a step-down process to begin to have some of that funding picked up by the school district as well. It also allows for Rochester Public Schools to be a resource for other districts who may want to enact this type of a program as well, as they've been doing it for some time and have sort of expertise and would be able to serve as that resource for other districts. That's a program really to help with workforce, and again, it's targeted at careers that are needed, specific in our community, and helping students earn those degrees. And so happy to have further discussion. I would like to turn to our testifier, who's the superintendent of Rochester Public Schools, who can speak more about the value of the program.
Great, we'll hear from Superintendent Peckel in a minute. Members, let's get that A2 amendment passed. Any questions on that amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of adopting the A2 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any nays? The amendment is passed. We are now in order, your bill is now in order. And Superintendent Dr. Kent Peckel, you're online if you would like to introduce yourself, and you may begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kent. I actually say Peckel, but my grandparents were Peckel, so I answer to either. And thanks to Senator Bolden for bringing this forward. I'm actually coming to you from New Orleans, where I'm here for a meeting of school districts working on deeper learning. And so thank you for letting me testify virtually. I will be brief, as Senator Bolden has hit very effectively some of the key points regarding Senate File 4035, which would enable Rochester Public Schools and other partners in our community to gradually assume financial support for an innovative program that is currently entirely funded by the state of Minnesota. The Pathways in Technology Early College Program, or PTEC, originated in New York more than a decade ago. The PTEC model spans all 4 years of high school and 2 years of higher education to enable students to earn both a high school diploma and a two-year post-secondary degree or credential in a STEM field. Students also participate in a range of workplace experiences, including mentorships, worksite visits, and paid internships. Now, all that might sound like other career and technical education programs in Minnesota, and there certainly are similarities. However, the key difference with PTEC is that the courses PTEC students take in high school are explicitly designed to prepare them for success in post-secondary education in career pathways that are aligned with the workforce needs of the communities where they are located. As Senator Bolden mentioned, there are two career pathways in our PTEC program here in Rochester, nursing and information technology. Those are two fields in which skilled workers are urgently needed, not only in our community, but across the state. Very importantly, as Senator Bolden also mentioned, in Rochester, we've been deliberate in recruiting students from backgrounds that are underrepresented in both of those two fields into our PTEC program. For example, the 56 students in the first cohort of the program are now in 11th grade, and 56% of those students, by coincidence, live in families with household incomes below $50,000. 45% will be the first in their families to attend college, and 70% identify as students of color. So why are we here asking for a change in legislation to support PTEC in Rochester? Our PTEC program was launched in 2021 with full funding from the state of Minnesota to enable us to bring this model to our state. The legislative appropriation for PTEC is $791,000 per year, which currently covers the full cost of operating the program here in Rochester. SF 4035 would put in place a process that would enable our Rochester partnership, which includes Rochester Public Schools, Rochester Community and Technical College, IBM Rochester, and Mayo Clinic, to assume progressively more responsibility for funding PTEC in our community while making funds available to launch PTEC in other Minnesota communities with technical assistance from our team in Rochester. Decreasing state support for PTEC in Rochester in increments over the next several years is essential to preserving PTEC in Minnesota because, candidly, we do not have access to sufficient local funding to assume full responsibility for PTEC at this time. As I mentioned a moment ago, the first cohort of our PTEC students in Rochester is now in 11th grade, and the group is comprised of students from backgrounds that are key to Minnesota's future. The students are working hard to be ready to enter and succeed in career fields that offer strong wages and that open the door to lives of opportunity for people in those fields and their families. It would be short-sighted to end this promising program before those students enter higher education and before we can evaluate the effectiveness of the PTEC model here in Minnesota. Thank you again for this opportunity and for considering supporting Senate File 4035.
Thank you so much, Superintendent Paquel. Members, any questions? Oh, Senator Kroon, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know all the details of the PTEC program and what it entails exactly and what it doesn't entail, but the school district I came from when I was on the school board was doing a lot of this work. We have a career and college pathways program, and one of those pathways was science and engineering with this emphasis on what appears to be very similar things what this program is doing. And we weren't getting any funding from the state to do that work. And so I'm uncomfortable with a very specific appropriation to a specific school district to do work that a lot of other school districts are doing as well. And I wouldn't be representing my district if I didn't ask the obvious question, why not funding for those other school districts that are doing the same or similar work?
Senator Bolden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question. So as was stated, this program has been in place for some years. And so I am newer to the legislature than when that was initiated. And so I can't speak to those discussions at that time. But, for those years, it has been solely funded by the state. This bill is a move away from that to decrease gradually that funding and to allow for other communities, to take part in that funding to do similar things. I think, we see the value in this program and want to support other communities doing that as well, both in terms of funds and in terms of, technical and advice and being a resource. So I hear what you're saying. This is actually a move to do that.
Senator Kroon, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And is part of the amendment here, are we making this one-time funding rather than ongoing funding, or what's the transition process that you described for the school district to take over the funding from the state?
Senator Bolden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that is part of the amendment, is to gradually step down the funding. Again, it's, you know, currently it's $791,000 a year, so to go from that to zero is a big shift, you know, especially in terms of, you know, not being able to plan for that. So this just stretches that out, decreases the amount over a few years to allow for planning for the district to be able to make that work and not have it be a takeaway for students. I mean, there's students in this program. We don't want to have the program have to, you know, have, you know, not be able to accommodate the students who are already in the program.
Thank you. Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate that. And I guess my, my line of questioning maybe isn't towards you as much as it should be for the implementation of this program to begin with, because I agree. I mean, if the state said we're going to fund this and there are students enrolled in the program right now and you just cut it off completely, I see that that could probably have some negative consequences for those students. But I just will note for the record, I mean, I thought I heard the testifiers say that this started in 2021, so we're not talking about that long ago, and I can say definitively that our school district was doing this work in 2021 because I was on the school board when we were doing it. And we also routinely help other districts free of charge, as far as I know, to help implement, help them implement programs similar to what we're doing. So I think that, you know, but I understand the situation we're in right now. So I'll just leave it at that and make those my comments. Thanks.
Thank you, Senator Cruen. Senator Rurick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just looking for some clarification. This would probably come from our staff. So on the amendment to A2, on line 1.14, it looks like we're going to a zero appropriation. But on line 1.27, it looks like it's going right back in. Can you help me understand what the purpose of how this is drafted?
Yep, we'll ask Ms. Helfer to explain that for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Rarick, for the question. So if you look at the underlying bill, the intent for the fiscal year 2025 appropriation was to extend that into the next biennium. However, under our budget rules, we would need to track an additional cost for that. So what the amendment does is it kind of works around the budget rules a little bit to reduce the appropriation in fiscal year 2025, and then it starts a new appropriation. So it's the exact same amount of money, but it has the new availability on it in order to comply with the budget rules. So overall, the total dollar amount is still going to be $791,000 per year, but the amendment allows that availability to be extended for the fiscal year 2025 appropriation.
Thank you. Follow up at all? No? Okay. Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I sometimes have to hear things two or three times before I get it. So the testifier said that this program is different than other programs in other schools. I mean, programs like Senator Cruen has or that I have with the career academies in Hibbing. But I didn't quite understand how this program was different from a lot of those. So I'm just wondering if he could sort of, or if Senator Bolden could just kind of restate that so that I have a better understanding of how this is different than other programs in other schools.
Senator Bolden, would you like Superintendent Pakel to? Okay, Superintendent, if you have a minute to explain that.
Yeah, thank you. First of all, I want to say I'm only 2.5 years into being in Rochester, and I would be asking the same questions you folks are asking if I were in your shoes. I would need to be able to understand, which I'd love to do, the career and technical programs in your districts to really give a direct comparison. But two key differences, I think, are, first of all, PTEC always results in a two-year degree or a credential, like practical nursing credential, that's recognized. Not all career pathway programs have that. More and more do. The key difference, though, is that in the PTEC pathway, entirely new coursework has been designed to ensure that students are fully academically ready for post-secondary education. In many career pathways programs, are kids choosing classes either in the high school or either at the community technical college that were not designed curricularly to focus tightly on that pathway. And so kids in our PTEC program don't take traditional English language arts and math. They take literacy and numeracy, both of which have been completely designed to focus on IT and nursing in their curricular pathways. And so it's not just assembling a coherent path through high school or through a two-year degree for students, which is a very good thing to do. There's an entirely different pathway in the core academic subjects that's been developed for those students starting in ninth grade. And the rationale, again, is that you have a lot of students who end up in a career pathway, but then they get into the rigorous coursework at a community and technical college or a four-year institution or a trade school, and they're not ready academically to do the math or the reading. And so the investment doesn't result in a credential or a degree. And so it's really that academic building block and the creation of new academic coursework that is a distinct difference in the PTEC model from many others. Maybe not where you are. That would be great to have an opportunity to learn more about what's happening, because we certainly have an aggressive career and technical education agenda in Rochester beyond this PTEC program, and we'd love to learn from some of those other models in the state.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I like what I'm hearing as far as that different model and providing different courses, but I kind of want to give you an example from my school district before I ask the next question. So in Hibbing, a number of years ago, we had a shop teacher and a math teacher that thought, hey, we have kids that are going to technical school that aren't prepared for technical school because they have to follow the grad standards. And of course, Senator Swazinski knows that I hate Alg 2, and I'm always going to go after Alg 2. And they're like, these kids shouldn't have to take these classes. And so they designed a class that they called Math for the Trades, and they came up, you know, with all of the benchmarks and everything, and then they presented it to administration, and administration said it's a great idea, but it doesn't meet the standards. And so I like the idea that you're providing these different educational opportunities for kids, but I'm wondering how you get around the stupid Alg 2 standards or whatever. And I know I'm in committee using the word stupid, but it is stupid. So wondering how you get around that. The standards, the grad standards, to allow the kids to do that.
Superintendent Pakel, you said you're just a couple years into this job. I'm not sure that you have that answer. Do you want to give it a try?
Yeah, well, I think I can. We have been very careful to meet state standards and RCTC's standards for credit-bearing coursework. And so that's why it actually is a very heavy lift. And it's why these are not just one class, it's multi-year classes in literacy and numeracy. And so the standards are taught less like a traditional banded, you know, now I'm taking Algebra 1, Geometry, Algebra 2. It's a multi-year literacy and numeracy structure. And so the standards actually happen more than in one class. But you're diagnosing a very important challenge here, which is how do we get the academic work in place and the applied work that gets kids energized for not sitting in desks and rows. And it's that combination that is really heavy lifting. And that was why the state planning funding for Rochester, and I would suggest for other districts that want to do this, is critical, because you need time to do that curricular design work, looking at the standards from K-12, and once again, the standards for credit-bearing courses at your post-secondary institution, and you gotta marry those two in the curricular design. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to learn more about what's happening up there in Hibbing. I will make a mental note to put that on my to-do list.
Thank you for that very succinct answer to that. Do you have a follow-up? Okay, Senator Rarick, you had a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and more just a comment again. It's one of those things that, you know, I think this provision came into place when a certain chair was a different chair was
Pamela.
Here. Yep, exactly. And I think it kind of shows that sometimes we tend to do things that help our districts, and yet there are other things going on in other districts that are very, very similar, and we need to look at it. You know, I think, and I'm trying to remember, I believe you came to Wright Technical,
yeah.
And I toured there with
yeah.
you, you know, and we heard, you know, they have a nursing program. They have eight schools that come and bring kids there. They teach welding, they teach automotive, they have nursing, and they're all coming out with a credential in their hand, and they're applying it to, and they've worked very hard to make it fit into graduation standards. And they're not getting state funding to make that happen. The eight school districts are putting the money in. You know, they're asking for some state money to help because those eight school districts can't take care of the needs of keeping the building up, like we just heard with the LTFM testimony. So I think these are things that we got to, you know, kind of continue to watch as members, that we don't pick individual school districts to give them the aid when others are doing it. Now, again, I agree with Senator Kroon. The legislature made a commitment to this program, and it needs to continue on. You can't cut it off when kids are partway through the program. But I think those are things we have to look at. There are very innovative things happening in school districts around the state to try to make things work, and we need to support all of them in their efforts. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Rarick, I would agree with you, and I'll say that one of the things, the great things about going on this tour this summer was seeing all these innovative programs that are going on in really unique communities and how they're addressing the needs of that community. It sounds sort of like the Rochester program was perhaps leading in this innovative program, and just as we were just listening here to Superintendent Paquel, you know, I learned something new about how you have to work really hard to make sure that those standards are embedded, and you have to work with the other higher ed program that you're using. And I think we all learned something from that and from the innovative program that Rochester, and now we know and appreciate the hard work that Rochester did to make sure that those students have what they need to get into the career of their choice in that way. So lots to learn here, that's for sure. Anyone else? Oh, Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as somebody with a minor in mathematics, I feel compelled to stick up for that. Senator Farnsworth left. Geometry, algebra 2, trigonometry, calculus, absolutely rock. Mm-hmm. And what, dare I say, one does not know what they're missing by not experiencing the adrenaline rush of completing a multivariable derivative or integral.
Well, now we know what makes you happy, Senator. So. All right, anything else? Any more comments or anything? Okay, Senator Bolden, your final words.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I really appreciate this conversation. Just one other thing I would highlight about this program, because I think it's an important piece of it, is really that public-private partnership, and the really the two pathways are specific to what's needed in our community with the IT track and IBM and the nursing track and Mayo Clinic, and the fact that it really is targeted towards kids from underserved communities. I think those are important pieces of the puzzle. And I really appreciate this conversation and appreciate the the approach of really expanding this funding to other communities who would like to do that. And this bill is a pathway to do that. So thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Senator Bolden. And thank you, Superintendent, for joining us all the way from Louisiana. So, Senator Bolden, with that, Senate File 4035 is laid over as amended for possible inclusion in our future omnibus. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oops, I didn't need to do that, did I? Wake everyone up. All right, I am going to move over to the podium, and Senator Gustafson is going to join us here at the front.
All right, Senator Kunesh, before us is Senate File 4588. Looks like there are no testifiers or amendments. So would you like to make the motion for SF 4588 to pass and be referred to the Finance Committee?
I do.
All right, begin when you're ready.
Thank you. Members, this is a summary of SF 4588. It makes adjustments to fiscal years 24 and 25 pre-K 12 education appropriations that we enacted during the 2023 legislative session to match the February 24 forecast data. The forecast levels are the best estimates of the state aid required for each K-12 program and appropriation, and generally a change in the estimated pupil counts or a change in the program participation is the most likely cause of a forecast adjustment. The changes in the appropriations are real and the changes must be enacted in law, but forecast adjustments have no fiscal impact when measured against the K-12 budget because the changes are built into the forecast estimates of the budget base. So moving all of the forecast articles now shows our districts that all of our programs will be adjusted and the schools will still receive the aid that they are entitled to. And so at this time, I'm going to ask Ms. Hofer if she would go through the bill and explain it to us.
Thank you, Senator Kunesh. Ms. Hofer, when you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Senator Kunesh provided a very accurate and succinct description of the forecast bill. So the forecast bill is typically enacted each year. It reflects the appropriations for fiscal years 24 and 25 and amends them so that they align with the February 2024 forecast. Senator Kunesh mentioned forecasted programs are formula-driven appropriations, and these typically have inputs that have a variable nature to them. So these would be things like pupil counts or prior year actual costs. And so as a result, the appropriations in this bill would align with the February forecast, and therefore, by comparison, there is not a cost to the forecast bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Hofer. Members, any questions? Really? Oh, Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just first time on the committee, first time seeing this bill come through this process. Can you give a little more explanation on that? You know, with the February forecast, help me understand better why it's a zero impact, even though we see numbers changing. I'm just trying to get an understanding of that.
Ms. Hofer.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Rarick, for the question. So the basis of the November and February economic forecasts include the forecasted programs that you see in Senate File 4588. And so the economic forecasts are the best estimate of what it will cost to fund the formula for these programs. And so as a result, there is a change in the appropriations, as you can see in the bill. And the bill just aligns the appropriations with the estimates from the forecasts. And so as a result, while there is a dollar change, because all of our bills are measured and tracked against the February forecast, when you're comparing the amounts in this bill that match the February forecast, there wouldn't be a trackable cost on, say, my spreadsheet, because it would align with the February forecast. And oftentimes you'll see these bills, sometimes they go individually, sometimes they go as part of a larger omnibus bill, but there is typically one passed each session.
Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I remember that they've come through before. I've just never needed to have that understanding because I haven't been the lead on the committee before. So just again for my clarification, so the numbers here are changing, but the numbers on the February forecast basically changed to reflect the exact same thing, so there's zero impact on the bottom line. Am I interpreting that correctly? Okay, thank you.
Members, any other questions? Senator Kunesh, any closing remarks?
No, just thanks for all the folks that worked so hard to ensure that we get the funding to the schools, and I hope that the schools are reassured that those dollars are going to meet the needs of their students.
All right, thank you. With that, Senator Kunesh renews her motion for SF-4588 to pass and be referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. That is the final bill. My prayer is that we all find someone who loves us as much as Farnsworth hates Algebra 2. And I believe our committee is closed. Thank you.